Welcome to the Alternative Story Podcast. At The All Story, we believe in changing the narrative of your life stories as well as of the larger mental health discourse. Our podcast uses a critical psychology, intersectional feminist, and self-compassionate lens to answer some frequently asked questions about mental health.
Hi, everyone. Thanks a lot for joining us for yet another episode of the Alternative Story Podcast. For those of you joining us for the first time, my name is Paris. I'm a counseling psychologist and I'm founder and head at The Alternative Story. For those of you who have joined us for the very first time, let me briefly give you an introduction about The Alternative Story and the work that we do, as well as an introduction to this podcast, of course. So The Alternative Story provides emotional and behavioral well-being services to individuals and organizations. We do that in the form of consulting and advisory. We do that in the form of individual and group interventions. And of course, we publish easy-to-use, user-friendly mental health resources such as articles and, of course, this podcast. Now, coming to this podcast, we've done a few episodes of this in the past. It's been a while since we did another one of these. I know a lot of you have been telling me on Twitter to resume this, and we finally found the time to do this again. So this podcast basically is one which takes up a different issue pertaining to emotional and behavioral well-being. Each episode looks at it from a critical psychology and an intersectional lens. We try to not only give you an overview of the topic, but also give you our unique take on it, as well as give you some tips and strategies which will help you to deal with it. Because ultimately, this is not just commentary, this is also supposed to be a self-help resource for you. Now, coming to how you can reach out to The Alternative Story for therapy or for solutions for your organization, you can reach out to us online as well as offline. Offline, we are present in Bangalore and Mumbai, and online, we are present for everybody. And you can reach out to us either on www.thealternativestory.in or write to us at hello@thealternativestory.in. So without further ado, let's get into today's topic. So today's topic is something that a lot of you have talked about on Twitter, have asked me to talk about this in the podcast, and of course is a perennial issue that presents itself in counseling. I'm talking about relationship loss. Now, when I'm saying relationship loss, let me just clarify over here that I'm not just talking about intimate or romantic relationships. I'm talking about relationships which are intimate or romantic with or without sexual involvement. I'm talking about marriage and marriage-like relationships. I'm also talking about relationships without a label, and you know, there are a lot of different terms about this one. There's situationships, there's flings, there's no strings attached, there's casual relationships. So we're talking about everything that comes under the purview of relationships. We also want to talk about, relationships which are not exclusively monoamorous or not cishet. So this also applies to polyamorous relationships, relationships which are not cis, not het as well. And of course, we also are saying that, this can be, relationships wherein the loss of the relationship is something which may not be acknowledged by the other person, may not be acknowledged by society. So when we talk about relationship loss, please don't take this to be synonymous with the breakup of an intimate relationship between two cis-het monoamorous people. We are talking about the entire spectrum of relationships over here. So that's a disclaimer that I thought I'd share with you before we go about this. Yeah. We are also talking about relationship loss in different ways. So there are, of course, relationships where things end by a conversation, or it is one or both partners or all partners decide together to end these relationships. But there are also relationships which end due to acts which are beyond the controls of the persons involved in the relationship. So you have family and societal pressure, you have illnesses, you have impairment, you have death, of course. And of course, there's violence, there's cheating, there's infidelity, and the whole lot, which means that the relationship is not sustainable, not viable, cannot continue. So that also presents an issue, because quite often we don't want to end the relationship, but these factors mean that the relationship ends prematurely, ends in a way that we don't want it to. So, you know, you might be getting an idea over here that not only are we talking about relationships here, we are also talking about the overlap of marginalizations with relationships. So if you're somebody who is in a polyamorous relationship, then how does the loss of that relationship get seen by society as compared to the loss of an exclusive mono relationship between two cishet people? You know, that's something that we're going to try and talk about in this episode. Similarly, what about, you know, the end of a relationship or the loss of a relationship due to infidelity, due to family or societal pressure, you know, in which we often see in the form of interfaith or intercaste relationships. We're going to try and talk about that as well. So there's a lot of ground to cover. And of course, one of the things that you'll realize also is that whatever be the reason for the loss, there's a lot of overlap between grief as well as relationship loss. So two lenses that we are simultaneously going to look at this phenomenon of relationship loss through. One is, of course, the intersectional lens. The other is the lens of grief and bereavement. Yeah. So let's get into why working with relationship loss is not only one of the things that we see most often, but it is also one of the most challenging things that at least I find to work with from a therapeutic perspective. So one of the things that, you know, is really, really challenging from the point of view of therapy is that, you know, people going through the loss of a relationship are often showing symptoms which are clinically consistent with that of the definition of depression, anxiety. They may be engaging in self-harming behaviors. However, as psychosocially oriented therapists, we understand that these are not pathological presentations, but situational factors which are leading to these symptoms. Quite simply put, somebody who is going through the loss of a relationship is showing patterns, is showing behaviors, is showing symptoms which look like they are anxious or depressed or suicidal. And they very well could be at that point in time. But as a psychosocially oriented therapist, as opposed to biomedically oriented therapists, we understand that these are situationally determined presentations of the symptom and not pathologically determined symptoms. I'm not saying here that I would never refer somebody who is going through relationship loss for psychiatric medication. I may do that depending on the severity of the symptoms or the level of difficulty that the person is facing, but I am not going to blanketly diagnose everybody with anxiety, depression, PTS. So this is one distinction which is important. But where do we draw that line becomes a challenge, you know, for me as a therapist. And I'm sure if there are other therapists listening to this also, you will concur with me that ensuring that we provide care while avoiding unnecessary diagnosis is one of the big challenges for us from the point of view of relationship loss. The second thing, of course, with the, you know, working with relationship loss often is that, you know, in other situations, people come to you with a clear goal, which is achievable and doable. Somebody comes to me with depression, they don't want to feel depressed. Somebody comes to me for treatment of anxiety, they don't want to feel anxious. Somebody comes to me with post-traumatic stress or, you know, complex PTSD, they don't want to, you know, feel the way they are feeling anymore. But when somebody comes to me with relationship loss or any form of grief or bereavement for that matter, it's not that they don't want to feel grief or bereavement anymore. They don't want to be in the place where they are experiencing this grief or bereavement to begin with. And that is something which you realize is an impossible goal to achieve. It is not possible for us to go back to a time where the relationship loss has not happened. it is not possible for us to go to a space where the relationship is a part of our life. So it becomes extremely difficult, because nothing short of having that relationship again feels like a good outcome. So a lot of work, you know, goes into helping the person understand the reality and the finality of the relationship loss. So from a point of view of therapy, it's difficult for us to work on these issues. And I can only imagine how difficult it must be for the persons who are going through the loss themselves. My argument is that relationship loss should be seen as a form of grief. And I'll tell you why I think so. So, you know, what we say is that when we look at relationship loss, you do exhibit all the same signs that one would exhibit while grief. You know, you want to go back to a place, like I said, where the loss has not been experienced. There are, you know, all these social pressures, there are all these motivational things that people will tell you to move on and that there will be better days in life, but it somehow does not seem to ever register. Now, we generally think that the term grief should be exclusively reserved for the loss of human life, but an abstract loss, a loss of a non-human life also for that matter, grief work has shown to be extremely useful in those places. Like, for example, grief work has been useful for people who had the loss of a home due to a natural disaster. Grief work has been useful for people going through the loss of a pet. Grief work has been useful for people dealing with a miscarriage, for that matter, or a family member or a loved one who goes missing, for that matter. Now, these may not be exactly synonymous with what we understand of grief, but I think it's time for us to expand that definition and include that in our layperson understanding also. So whether you are somebody who is you know, grieving the loss of a partner due to a breakup, or whether you are somebody who had to exit a complicated, a messy, violent relationship, the fact that you will go through a sense of loss is inevitable, right? So people may think that if the relationship was not a good one, then they won't really feel sad about it. But that's not true. Irrespective of the nature of the relationship, irrespective of how good or bad the relationship was, it is common, it is absolutely natural for us to experience a sense of loss. Now, this is something a lot of times that people who come for therapy can't wrap their head around. I didn't like them. They were objectively really, really bad to me. Why am I still longing for them? I know that I'm so much better off without them in my life. Why am I still longing for it? So I think to this, it's important to, again, go back to the idea of self-compassion, that why the loss is there, why is the feeling of loss there right now, is not important. The fact that there is a feeling of loss, the fact that there is a feeling of hurt, the fact that there is a feeling of pain, those are things which are important to register. If there is pain, one must attend to it from a place of self-kindness. That is the only principle that you need to remember. Yeah. So that's one common thing that people often come to me with, and this is one perspective that often helps people understand that it's okay to grieve the loss of a relationship which was objectively bad also, because you may have still been invested in it, or the relationship could have been good at one period of time before it descended into something that was not good, right? Things are not black and white when it comes to our feelings. It's difficult to have black and white feelings about anything. Things can be objectively bad or objectively good in terms of violence, but apart from that, there is a lot of gray space. So I think when it comes to your emotions, don't try to make them all black or all white. It's okay for you to experience both a sense of relief at the loss of a relationship, but also a sense of loss, a sense of void. right? So that's one thing that I would like to share with you. The second question that most often people ask is, am I ever going to be the same again? Will life ever be the same again? Am I ever going to be normal again? The answer to that is no. And I know that that's not something that a lot of you wanted to hear. But yes, quite simply put, the answer to that is no. We never emerge from a loss as the same people that we were. We change. It changes the view of the world in some ways. It changes the way that we deal with ourselves, with future relationships in some way. But here's the thing. It doesn't have to be for the worse. You learn sometimes to set up better boundaries. You learn sometimes to choose your partners better. You learn sometimes to negotiate for space in a better way. You learn many ways that things that you considered as normal or even desirable in a relationship are things that you perhaps didn't want, right? So, am I going to be the same again? No, you're not going to be. The question that you need to ask yourself, however, is do you want to be the same person again, right? Because this person that may emerge from it is a stronger person, is a better person than you ever were. And we'll come to that, right? So that's another question that people often ask me. And of course, the third thing is what people ask me is, okay, this is how I feel. I don't want to feel like this anymore. So what do I do? So here, I mean, like I said, we are applying the same principle of grief work to relationship loss. Now, what would it mean to apply grief work to relationship loss over here? Now, a lot of you may be familiar with what is called as the five-stage model of grief. It's the Kubler-Ross model. Some people call it DABDA, the denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. Those are the five stages of it. Now, more recent models of working with grief have argued that grief is not like a list of stages that one passes through in a linear fashion. Rather, grief is a process which you have to work through. So it's not a state of passive stages which are happening to me. Rather, I am working through different challenges or tasks that grief poses in front of me. So it goes from a passive and a helpless notion to an active and a process where I am in control. I have work to do. And I really find that in therapy, working with any kind of loss, when somebody has the idea that they need to work on something, they find themselves much more in control and much more inspired to do. So what I'm going to talk about in the next few minutes is the work that you need to put in order to try and overcome and move ahead from grief. This is taken from William Worden's model of grief. So this talks about some tasks that one can do while going through the process of grief. So the first stage is accepting the reality of the loss. Now, this does not just mean saying to ourselves that it is over, but actually accepting that no more emotions or energy needs to be invested towards resolving things. So this may mean you finally have that conversation with your partners that, listen, let's not try and work on this anymore. Let's just accept that it's time to pull the plug on this relationship. And also telling yourself that I don't need to try to make things work again. It's over and it's okay for it to be over. For some people, this may mean cutting off contact. For some people, this may mean making an announcement to family and friends that the relationship has ended. Do what works for you to help you register that the relationship is over. The second stage is the harder one, however. Most people do the first and then just move on with their lives. And that really doesn't work out well. Please don't do that. And a reason why a lot of people just jump from the first stage to try and be quote-unquote normal again is because the second stage of grief usually involves opening yourself up and allowing yourself to experience the pain and the negative emotions related to the loss. Now, quite simply put, what this means is that there is no substitute for letting yourself feel, experience, and process the pain. Most of the times people will tell me in therapy that this is not a good time for me to go through a relationship loss. I have an exam coming up, I have a lot of stuff to do at work, there is some issue at home, I am living alone, and I just can't afford to be sidelined by this grief. Therefore, I must put a pin on that and I must move on with my life. Let me tell you, there's never going to be a good time for you to go through a loss. But there's never going to be a substitute for allowing yourself the time and the space to heal and move on from something. Healing comes in different forms for different people. You need to be able to understand what is healing for you, and you need to understand that this will take time. A good analogy that I like to give at this time is that you're going to have wave after wave of grief hitting you, and initially you have to just accept the fact that you are in turbulent waters and you have to just try and stay afloat. If you try to run away from those waves, those waves are going to catch up with you because they are bigger, stronger, faster than you are. If you try to push them back, obviously it's a futile exercise because you can't stop a wave that is hurtling towards you. So what do? We try to learn to swim. We try to learn how to surf and stay afloat. Eventually, there will only be a time where there are what we call as tugs or sudden temporary upsurges of grief. Which basically is a term used to, you know, refer to a sudden recollection of a grief or a loss, which you may have not thought of for weeks or months, and it out of nowhere comes, hits you like a bag of brick, knocks the wind out of you, and leaves you like wondering, did you ever get over it? Good news over here is that yes, you have gotten over a large part of it. It is normal for you to have these stugs. So those of you listening to this podcast wondering, I had this breakup years ago, but why does this particular song or this particular place or this particular trigger still leave me completely floored? Well, it's normal. It's human. There's nothing wrong with that. You are not doing badly at this moving on process. So that's another part. Coming to the third challenge, the challenge which people find very often, the most difficult, in fact, is adjusting to a world where, you know, the relationship or the loved one is not a part of our lives. Now, here, not only do we have to learn to adjust how to live without the loved one, but also what we are without them. You know, quite a lot of times, people find it extremely hard to be kind, compassionate, or validating of themselves in the absence of another person to do that for them. So people are not able to look after themselves because there's no partner. People are not able to validate their own struggle because there's nobody to ask them how they're doing. People sort of just give up on their health, their well-being, their appearance, because who am I doing this for? Right? So understanding that we are people who existed before this relationship and life exists beyond this relationship as well is the most important thing to do. How do we do this? Well, you need to look at the number of things that you were doing for yourself before this relationship happened, or the number of things that you did because you liked them, not because your partner or your partners and you like doing them. And if you find that there are no such things, then one of the things that you need to work on in therapy is familiarizing yourself with this person, understanding who you are, what you like to do, and experimenting with those things. So use this time to really rediscover yourself and find out what you like doing, what you can do. This is a task which I cannot emphasize enough. And most often people make their huge breakthroughs in therapy at this part of it. The last one, of course, is the longer term challenge. And people generally think that this is a question that they have to answer right now. And the question over here is, what is the relationship we are going to share with the person who we are not in a relationship with anymore? What will we be going forward? Will we be friends? How will I remember this person? Do I remember this as a good phase in my life? Do I remember this as a bad phase? Do I remember this for the good times, or do I remember it on the basis of how it ended? Again, this is not something that has one straight answer. But like I said, dialectical behavior therapy tells us that it is possible for two contrasting opposites, two contrasting realities to simultaneously coexist. There can be good things that you remember about the relationship which do not negate the fact that the relationship ended badly. There can be the relationship which was extremely hurtful or violent, but there could have been moments of happiness, moments of joy in that relationship. There can be a really, really bad equation with the partners now, but it does not really speak of what it was earlier on. So opposites exist. It's okay for you to do that. We don't have to decide on what the nature of our relationship is going to be going forward. This is an ever-evolving, ever-changing task. So allow yourself to go through that. So generally, when I work with somebody going through loss or grief, this is something that I go through. And I want to share a quick word on grief that isn't validated by us or the world. So like I said, the world will often tell us that there are some forms of relationships which are not as legitimate as the others. You of course understand by now what I'm talking about. So relationships which didn't have a label, relationships which were not quote unquote official to the world, relationships which society didn't approve of, are all relationships where the loss is also not considered valid. You're not supposed to grieve the loss of a relationship which you were quote-unquote not supposed to be in the first place, is what a lot of people feel. Now, I think what I'm trying to say to you over here again is go back to the idea of self-compassion. The nature of the hurt does not decide whether it deserves compassion or care or not. All hurt deserves care and compassion. All relationships are valid. If it was valid to you, it's a valid loss. If you considered it a relationship, it was a relationship. If you feel that you are hurting, grieving, and feeling like something important has been taken away from you, then that is the truth. There isn't an objective truth for everybody, which means that this kind of a relationship is a relationship and other forms of relationships are not relationships. And I'm talking to people out there who may be, like I said, in non-cishet relationships, in non-marital relationships, in relationships which society doesn't consider as acceptable or valid, as like interfaith or intercaste relationships. Those two are valid, and those two deserve kindness, compassion, and attention in therapy. So please don't try to keep it a secret. Please don't try to keep it something to yourself. Talk about it in therapy. Access therapy about this, irrespective of what are the social labels attached to that relationship. Of course, it's important that the therapist that you're talking to also is somebody who is LGBT friendly, caste aware, and is somebody who understands the intersections of these different identities and mental health. Again, the alternative story is one such space. So at the end of today's episode, what I'd like to tell you is that it can feel like the loss of a relationship is the end of the world, but it's actually just the end of a chapter in your life. There is a story beyond this also. It can feel like you are not recovering fast enough and you're stuck, but it's important to remember that there is no set path or timeline. Everyone has their own journeys, and that's absolutely okay. And most importantly, things may not feel the same, things may not ever go back to being the same, but that's not a bad thing. We are changing all the time, and change can often be for the good. So remember that it's okay to not be the same person that you were. Change is good, change can be good. So with that, I think I'll leave you for today. Please remember that if this podcast left you with any reminders or any reliving of feelings of a relationship loss, then please make sure that you access your therapist if you have one, or access us for therapy. As I mentioned, we are open online and offline. The details I shared at the start of this podcast, but I'll repeat once again for you. You can write into us at hello@thealternativestory.in, and you can visit us at www.thealternativestory.in. So with that, we come to the end of yet another episode of the Alternative Story podcast. Please let us know through your comments, through your tweets and your emails, how you found this episode and what you would like to cover in future episodes. So until next time, this is Paris signing off. Thanks a lot.
Thank you for listening to the All Story podcast. At the All Story, we offer therapy online through video, phone, email and chat, as well as offline in Bangalore and Bombay. If you have a question you would like us to address through the podcast, or have a request for therapy, get in touch with us at hello@alternativestory.in.